a healthy diet, regular exercise, maintaining a healthy body weight, quitting smoking. These are all factors that can have a big impact on keeping heart disease at bay. And part of a healthy diet is cutting out saturated fats, right? Well, not so fast. Today on Go Green Inside, we're talking about fats and heart disease. Hi, I'm Karen Brown from Go Green Inside. And on the phone with me today is naturopathic doctor Candace Esposito. Candace is also known as the Sioux Naturopath and is calling in today from Sault Ste. Marie in Northern Ontario, Canada, where she's the director of the Algoma Natural Healing Clinic. Hi, Candace, and thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
Now, you wrote an article for us recently for Go Green Inside about five things that we probably don't know that could save us from heart disease. And in that article, you really shattered, I thought, a few myths that are pretty commonly held in the mainstream beliefs about heart disease and our risk factors. And one of them in particular that I thought was really intriguing was around the subject of fats and cholesterol. So I thought today we could delve into that a little bit more. So let's talk about fats. I think most of us know by now that not all fats are created equal, but there's a lot of confusion, I think, and I know I'm personally still a little bit mixed up about the different types of fats. For example, saturated versus monounsaturated and polyunsaturated. So perhaps we could just start by having you go through those different types of fats and explaining them, because I know they're in our diets.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think that's a great place to start. So the most common way to differentiate fats is by their chemistry or structure. And there's three main types, like you said, saturated, monounsaturated, and polyunsaturated. And the saturated fats, fatty acids, have no double bonds. So all their carbon atoms are saturated with hydrogen. And this is actually what makes them highly stable, which means that they don't go rancid even when they're heated to high temperatures like for cooking. Saturated fats are solid or semi-solid at room temperature, and our body can actually make them from carbohydrates. They're found in foods like animal fats and tropical oils like coconut oil. The second type is monounsaturated fatty acids, and these have one double bond. So they're relatively stable, they don't go rancid easily, and they can be used for cooking, usually at lower temperatures. They tend to be liquid at room temperature, and our body makes them from saturated fats. Probably the most common monounsaturated fat found in our food is oleic acid, which is the main fat in olive oil, as well as almond, pecan, cashew, and avocado oils. And then the last type, polyunsaturated fatty acids, have two or more double bonds, which makes them highly reactive. So they're more unstable, and as a result, they go rancid much more easily. So these are oils that you should never cook with, or they should never be heated. And produce polyunsaturated fats. So they're often also referred to as essential fatty acids, meaning that we have to get them from our diet. And the two most common polyunsaturated fats found in our food are linoleic acid, which is often called omega-6, and then linolenic acid, which is often called omega-3. Now, all fats and oils have a combination of saturated, monounsaturated, and polyunsaturated fatty acids. But, for example, animal fats like butter and lard will have more saturated fatty acids. Vegetable oils like coconut oil, which is from the tropics, has more saturated fats as well. But then the vegetable oils from the northern climates like canola and corn oil have more polyunsaturated fatty acids.
Okay, wow. Still confusing, but less so now, I think.
Okay.
So I guess I've always been led to believe, I've read it, I think, lots of times, saturated fat, not good. And it's, you know, linked to increased cholesterol, which in turn leads to heart disease. So is that true or not, you know, that true?
Yeah, no, that's actually a myth. So you hear that a lot, you know, stay away from saturated fats. Saturated fats are bad for you. But unfortunately, that mentality is what stirred on, you know, the modern low-fat craze. But there's actually no truth to it. And in fact, it can be a potentially harmful way of dieting. Saturated fats play a lot of important roles in our body. They hold up the walls of our cells. They help us utilize essential fatty acids. They enhance our immune system, protect our liver, contribute to strong bones. Our lungs and our kidneys can't even function without saturated fats. So not only are saturated fats not the cause of heart disease, but they're actually the preferred food for our heart. So, you know, saturated fats are good for you. You know, consider the fact that breast milk is 54% saturated fat. You know, it's there in such high quantities because it's crucial to our development. Our body cannot function without saturated fat.
Wow. So then where did this idea come from? Where did this myth start? I seem to remember a while back there was some landmark study that gets referred to a lot. I think it's called the Framingham study. And my understanding was that that was the study that showed this link between saturated fats and cholesterol and heart disease.
Yeah. The Framingham study is often used as so-called proof of this idea of the lipid hypothesis. And the lipid hypothesis was first published or written about by Dr. Ansel Keys back in the 1950s. And it basically states that there's a direct relationship between a saturated fat and heart disease. So the more saturated fat a person consumes in their diet, the higher their cholesterol levels and the greater the risk that they would die of heart disease. The theory was accepted at the time, and you know, even though there wasn't a lot of evidence to support it. And like you said, the Framingham Heart Study, which began back in 1948, is often cited as proof of this hypothesis. Now, this study is still ongoing. About 6,000 people are involved in the study, so it's a large-scale study. Researchers from the study initially noted that the people who weighed more and had abnormally high blood cholesterol levels were slightly more at risk for heart disease. And that was widely publicized at the time, although the link to cholesterol was rather weak. But then back in 1992, the former director of the Framingham study, Dr. William Castelli, published a statement to the effect that the study actually more accurately found that the more saturated fat one eats, the more cholesterol one eats, the lower the person's serum or blood cholesterol. So that was the exact opposite of the lipid hypothesis. Now, unfortunately, I don't know if that conclusion was really publicized in the media at that time. And by then, you have to consider, too, that that false theory about saturated fats had already gotten traction and it was already largely accepted. Fortunately, there's a lot of research coming out now that proves that the old way of thinking about saturated fats is just, you know, simply wrong. There was a meta-analysis done in 2011 that pulled about 21 studies, so it included 350,000 adults, another, you know, large-scale meta-analysis, and it found no difference in the risk of heart disease and stroke between people with the lowest and the highest intakes of saturated fat. And then a large Danish study published last year showed no correlation between saturated fat intake and heart disease risk. And of course, there's a lot of research coming out of studies of traditional populations in their diets. For example, you know, there's several Mediterranean populations that have low rates of heart disease, even though fat, like saturated fat from lamb and sausage and goat cheese, comprises up to 70% of their calories. You know, people will often cite the Japanese culture, you know, Japan being the nation with the longest lifespan. They'll cite that as an example of a low fat or the benefits of a low fat diet. But that in and of itself is a myth too, because the Japanese diet has more cholesterol than the typical North American diet. You know, they get it in the form of shellfish and fish broth and eggs and pork and beef. But we know that their intakes of animal fat have more than doubled since the end of the Second World War. And since that time, their incidence of coronary heart disease has continued to lower. So there's really no evidence to back up the claim that saturated fats are bad for you.
Wow. Okay. So what do you recommend in your practice to your patients when it comes to eating fats? What do you suggest?
Well, first of all, I usually, you know, let them know that they don't need to be afraid of good, healthy, saturated fats. You know, we need them for our health. The typical North American diet has too many polyunsaturated fatty acids from vegetable oils like soy and corn and safflower and canola oil. And the problem with these oils is that they become oxidized or rancid when they're heated, you know, during the cooking process. And it's like what happens with iron if you expose it to moisture or to air. You know, over a period of time, it starts to rust. And it's this rusting in our bodies that causes the increased risk of heart disease and cancer and other health issues. So, you know, I'll recommend to my patients to avoid cooking with those types of oils. You know, they're most often going to be found in processed foods, fast foods, and fried foods. So if they're avoiding those types of foods, then they're just going to naturally have a lower amount of polyunsaturates in their diet anyway. And, I tell them it's important to look for organic, grass-fed sources of animal products because, for example, organic eggs from hens that are allowed to feed on insects and green plants contain a 1-to-1 ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acids, which is the ideal ratio. But if you compare that to store-bought eggs, those contain up to 19 times more omega-6 than omega-3, and that's, you know, way too much omega-6. It's an unbalanced ratio.
Yeah.
You know, I also say to completely avoid hydrogenated and partially hydrogenated fats like shortening and margarine. They're even worse than the polyunsaturates. You know, basically you want to focus on whole, unprocessed foods. Eat beef, lamb, organ meats, poultry, and eggs from grass-fed animals. You know, wild fish is a good source of omega-3s. Full fat milk products from grass-fed cows, preferably in their raw form or fermented form, like, for example, you'll find in kefir. I tell them to use butter instead of margarine, you know, moderate amounts of cold-pressed extra virgin olive oil, sesame oil, and flaxseed oil in their raw, unheated forms, you know, really great for salads, for example, and then to use the tropical oils like coconut and palm oil for cooking. So the key is to look more for animal products that are, you know, that come from grass-fed sources, and then you really can't go wrong in terms of your selection of the healthy saturated fats.
Great. Okay. So then it just sort of begs one more question, I think, which is if saturated fats aren't the enemy and don't cause heart disease, are there some other things that do that we should be aware of, and, you know, what can we do about them? If you have any other tips that our listeners today can take away with them.
Sure. Well, we know that inflammation, oxidative damage, stress, and sugar are the real underlying causes of heart disease. I think the number one dietary factor when it comes to heart disease is sugar rather than fat. What research shows us is that replacing dietary saturated fats with carbohydrates like breads and bagels, pasta, rice, increases our risk of heart disease, not to mention obesity and, you know, and diabetes, which themselves are risk factors for heart disease. So avoiding refined sugars and white flour products can help us reduce our risk. A good rule of thumb that I'll tell my patients is no more than 25 grams of sugar per day. You know, if you're overweight or have heart disease or at risk of heart disease, you probably want to limit that to, you know, 15 grams. But I think it's important for individuals to kind of advocate for themselves and request from their doctors a thorough assessment of their health disease risk. you know, to make sure that it's going beyond just the typical cholesterol panel that's done. For example, a test called C-reactive protein, or CRP, can help assess levels of inflammation in your body. Insulin resistance, or metabolic syndrome, is a major predisposing factor for heart disease, sometimes called pre-diabetes. And that causes your triglycerides to go up, and that increases inflammation, leading to blood thickening and clotting. And you can check for that with a couple of tests. There's one called hemoglobin A1C, which is a way to assess how you're regulating your blood sugar levels, and then a glucose insulin tolerance test to check for high levels of insulin. Because usually it's insulin that'll go up first. By the time, you know, your blood sugar goes up, that process has been developing for a long time. So it's really important to check your blood sugar levels. Another test that's really important, I think, is homocysteine. High levels of homocysteine are correlated with the buildup of plaque in the arteries and the tendency to form clots. So it's a good assessment for stroke risk. Fortunately, you know, it's a problem that, you know, if you do have high homocysteine levels, it can be relatively easily addressed by replenishing nutrient deficiencies, usually B12, B6, and folic acid. So those, you know, just a few examples of simple blood tests that are much more accurately correlated to heart disease risk in comparison, you know, to just getting the typical outdated cholesterol panel. Because once you know your risk factors, then the treatment needed to address them becomes obvious. You know, lowering your heart disease risk is much more than just lowering your cholesterol levels.
Great. Okay. That's awesome, Candace. Thank you so much for your time today and for sharing this really, really important information. Now, where can people go to find out more about you and about your work?
Sure. Yeah. People can get in touch with me by visiting my website at healingclinic.ca. There's a contact link at the top of the page where you have the option to give me a call or drop me an email, and I'm always happy to answer any questions.
Awesome. Thanks again, Candace. Bye for now.
Yeah, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
This has been Karen Brown for Go Green Inside, speaking with naturopathic doctor Candace Esposito. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And for more great tips on natural health, inspired living, and how to sustain your internal environment, please visit us at gogreeninside.ca. And you can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Go Green Inside. Thanks so much and have a great day.